That's great, Dad stuff. Because, you know, anytime our kids choose on their own accord good, doesn't that just warm your heart as a parent? You know, I oftentimes think that that's like God. I mean, you guys know you got to have a little bit of imagination, right? Like, that's important to have a little bit of imagination. I can imagine God up there every time one of his children does something good, getting a little crack in his voice, and just being like, whew, they just did that. They just chose that. And man, I just think about all the angels just fluttering their wings and Jesus and God giving it high fives up there and saying, they just chose that. So good stuff, brother. Appreciate that. That had nothing to do with the lesson, but I just wanted to call that out because how much I appreciated it. So we're at Philadelphia, you know, and not to do with the election. The church in Philadelphia, not in Pennsylvania. All right, this is one of the churches mentioned in Revelations, and we're going to be talking about that church this morning, the church in Philadelphia. But before we do, I'm going to read just this, the first couple verses of this, and we're going to be in Revelation chapter 3, starting in verse 7. So starting in verse 7 of chapter 3, it says, "And the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, the words of the Holy One, the true One, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, who shuts and no one opens." You know, he's talking about keys here. And, you know, I'm a car dealer. Some of y'all who don't know me don't know that. That's okay. Don't hold it against me. They're still lawyers, so you can be mad at them. But I got a lot of key stories. Lots of key stories. You know, I can remember 22 years ago, a guy calling me, a solicitor, saying, hey, they were trying to sell me key tags to put on all our cars. And the key tag said, I have the keys to the car of your dreams. And I thought, that's kind of corny. But anybody lose keys? I don't. My son does, often. So sometimes it's, you know, here's a couple interesting facts. I do not have a key to this church building. And I kind of like that. Guess who no one calls if they need to get in? Me, right? Somebody's like, hey, can you open it up? I'm like, I can't. Because with keys come what? Responsibility, right? And so here's another interesting fact. I've owned a car dealership for 24 years, and I do not have a key to the front door. Or the gate, or the back shop. I don't have a single key to my own office. Guess who never calls me to open up? No one ever calls me, right? When the police call because someone broke in, I call someone else because I live an hour away from my office. But with keys come responsibility, don't they? When Lana and I sold our house and we moved in temporarily into Hunter and Jaden's basement, I know that sounds really weird that you move in with your son for a period of time. He called a family meeting, and he's like, all right, everybody's keys need to be put in this bowl to their cars in case somebody's got to move a car to get out. I'm not real comfortable with that because he likes losing keys, right? But and can you remember when you got your driver's license and your parents handed you the keys for the very first time? Just the sense of wow, and responsibility, excitement, independence, right? But the keeper of the keys, oftentimes, matter of fact, we have a key machine now at my office. And I do have a way to get in it. They taught me I have a passcode, right? And this key machine, its sole purpose is to keep track of keys to 100 cars so that we quit losing them. Because every time we look, you know, keys back when I started in the car industry, you could go down to Ray Jeans or go to Walmart and get a key cut for your car for about $2.25. Now if you lose a key, it's $400 because all the technology wrapped up in that key. So now you have to buy machines to house these keys because now they are worth something. But there is something to say about keys and who is responsible to hold the keys. And the reason I'm kind of picking on that a little bit is because as I thought through this lesson and as I thought through the opening to this Church of Philadelphia, there is this idea, this importance, this value to he who holds the keys. And it's he who holds the keys has displayed and has shown the utmost responsibility, character, the ability to know who should and should not come in. And so this phrase that in red letters at the beginning of, to the Church of Philadelphia, it comes from Isaiah. So if you want, turn to Isaiah chapter 22. And I can't, Hunter got on to me, I think that was a backwards way of getting on to me for blowing it and, you know, spilling the beans on some of the stuff he's teaching in class. So I'm careful not to do that, even though I probably will again. Let's start in verse 15. It says, "Thus says the Lord God to the host, come, go to this steward, to Shebna, who is over the household, and say to him, what have you to do here, and whom have you here, that you have cut out here a tomb for yourself, you who carve a dwelling for yourself in the rock? Behold, the Lord will hurl you away violently. O you strong man, he will seize firm hold on you and whirl you around and around, and throw you like a ball into the wide land. There you shall die, and there you shall be glory, and there shall be your glorious chariots, your shame of your master's house. I will thrust you from the office, and you will be pulled down from your station. In that day I will call my servant Eliakim, the son of Hilkah, and I will clothe him." I lost my spot. "And I will clothe him with your robe and bind your sash on him, and will commit your authority to his hand. And he shall be a father to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. And I will place on his shoulders the key of the house of David. He shall open and none shall shut. He shall shut and none shall open. I will fasten him like a peg in a secure place, and he will become a throne of honor to his father's house." And so Jesus is calling from this time in Isaiah where there's the keeper of the key, the keeper of the house of David, he who opens the door and no one can close, he who shuts the door and no one can open. And this person is not being responsible with that. He's taking it on for personal gain. And as a result, it's going to be stripped from him and given to someone else. And what I need you to understand is what Jesus is saying to the church in Philadelphia is, listen, I have the key. Jesus is saying, I have the key. The Father has entrusted me with the key. And as a result of the Father entrusting me with the key, when I open the door, no one's going to shut it. But when I shut the door, no one's going to open it. I am the keeper of the key. I am the keeper of the kingdom. I am the one who opens, and I am the one who closes the door. And I need us to hear that this morning. Because Jesus says in his I am statements, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So as you think about that I am statement of Jesus, and then think about this opening to the Church of Philadelphia, I want you to see the importance and the value in who Jesus is and what he's representing here. He's saying, listen, I'm the one with the key. Everyone has to call me to get in. Y'all get that, right? No one calls me to get in my store. No one calls me to get in the church building. They might call me and I'm going to tell them to call someone else because I don't have a key. No one gets in to heaven unless you call on Jesus Christ. And that is what he is opening up with this church in Philadelphia. He's saying, listen, I am the keeper of the key. Keep things important. Keep things back. I need you to always maintain and keep your focus on me. Interestingly enough, the Church of Philadelphia is one of two churches that doesn't have a condemnation. Y'all hear that, right? There's no critique. As is a lot of the churches we've been looking at, it's like, hey, you're doing this good, but this, ooh, you're not so good at. There's none of that, you're not so good to the Church of Philadelphia. They're doing things right. You know what I love about that? Does anybody know a perfect person? Good. I was hoping no one would raise their hand. How about, does anybody know a perfect church? Good. I was hoping no one. Oh, Cooper. Cooper raised his hand. You know what's beautiful about that? The church of Philadelphia is not perfect. The people in it are not perfect, and yet there's no criticism from Jesus. What? Let that sink in for a second. Let that sink in that it's a group of imperfect people in an imperfect body of believers, and there's no criticism. Jesus doesn't call us to perfection. He is perfection. He calls us to Him. Y'all see that imagery? I don't want you to leave here thinking, wow, this Church of Philadelphia is just a small group of really good people who had it all figured out and never did anything wrong. That is not right. They're a small group of people who loved Jesus more than anything else, who made mistakes but honored the one who kept the keys. They walked through the door that Jesus opened. I mean, when a door is opened, how many of y'all like police dramas? Anybody like Blue Bloods? That's the first one that came to my mind. Got a few Blue Bloods. When the police go to the door to knock and they realize it's cracked, do they continue to knock? Or do they just walk in? When we see an open door, what do? We walk through it. And oftentimes in our faith, Christ has got a door wide open and we're still trying to walk around it. We're still trying to find a different way in. And the reality is, Jesus is saying, this is the way in. The church in Philadelphia understood He's the keeper and we're going to honor Him. So let's keep going. Verse 8, I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door, which no one is able to shut. I know that you have but little power, and yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. Behold, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan, who say that they are Jews and are not, but lie. Behold, I will make them come and bow down before your feet, and they will learn that I have loved you. And so what I want you to see is this picture, what Jesus, He's saying, I could see this possibly to a church in Bayfield. Hey, you may be a little bit small, but I'm big. In the society that you're in the community that you're in, you may not feel like you have this great influence. You may not have financial access that other people, you might be small in stature. But I am Lord, and you honor me. And though you're small, you're strong. And what I want you guys to hear this morning, the size of this church has no relevance. The size of God does. Y'all kind of hear me on that? The size of this church is not relevant. The size of my God is. And the church in Philadelphia understood that. They're in a community. Philadelphia, the community of Philadelphia, is a smaller community. I did the research and now I'm forgetting it. But it was completely destroyed in AD 17 with an earthquake. Then it was built back. And very agricultural. They had a lot of vineyards and they were important in that regard. But they were a small community. But in this small community, there's synagogues. And oftentimes, especially right after Christ, we have Jewish communities who are rejecting Christians. They're saying, no, you don't have it figured out. And so this group of people probably aren't invited into the synagogue. They've been rejected because they don't fit the norm anymore. And Jesus is saying, listen, this is God's house. And oftentimes the Jews think they've got the corner on the market because they are God's chosen people. Y'all with me on that? But they've lost something. They've forgotten it. And it's the reference that you see in verse 9. Behold, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan who say that they are Jews and are not, but lie. Behold, I will make them come and bow down before your feet. And they will learn that I have loved you. Isaiah 43 Verse 4, because you are precious in my eyes and honored, and I love you, I give men in return for you, people in exchange for your life. Fear not, for I am with you. I will bring your offspring from the east, and from the west I will gather you. I will say to the north, give up, and to the south, do not withhold. there is a prophecy. And I want you to understand, these are, John's getting this vision, and these churches are getting this information. They're getting a letter that John has had this vision about their church. It'd be like us getting mail. Desiree, how often do we get mail? It's not a bill. Or a solicitation. It's not very often, probably. But it'd be like Bayfield Church of Christ getting a letter in the mail from Jesus. Wouldn't that be cool? But we have. We've gotten seven of them in the last month. And in that letter that Jesus wrote to the church in Bayfield, we would read it and we would be excited about this section, because in this section there's a prophecy that was given to the Jews that God would bring them to bow at their feet so that the mankind would know that Jesus loved them. And so in this, when they read this, they know of this prophecy. And this prophecy is changing, it's morphing from the Jews to Christians, to believers in Jesus Christ. Why? Because God has entrusted, how it all started, God has entrusted Jesus with the keys to the house. Has anybody ever been locked out of your house before? That's fun, isn't it? It's a little helpless, right? You start at the front door and maybe the back door's unlocked. So you go around back. Oh, it's locked. What do you try next? Windows, right? Windows. And how many of y'all gotten through the whole process and found out there's nothing unlocked? Or maybe some of y'all live in a second-story house and you look at that upstairs window and you're like, I might could get up there. And if I could, I wonder if it's unlocked. But the reality is we kind of get in this place of helplessness, don't we? When we realize we should be invited, but the door's closed and we can't get in. And what I want you to understand is that Christians today are sitting there locked out of the house and scratching their head. Why? It's because they don't know who's holding the keys. And they're not seeking out the one that can help them. Churches are full, churches, not just society, churches are full of people who are not going to the key holder. They're trying to come to God on their own terms and in their own way, and through whatever door or window that they can find. How many of y'all like to do things on your own? Grew up my whole life that way. And unfortunately, it bleeds into our spiritual walk. You can't do it. You can't. Heard my whole life from my father, who I love dearly, deeply. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Some of y'all heard that one too. Right? And there is a place for that. But this isn't it. This isn't it. Jesus is saying, listen, I got you. And I want you to come through the front door. But to come through the front door, you need to acknowledge and know who I am. To the church in Philadelphia, not a perfect church, not a church that did everything right, but a church that fundamentally understood the access to God is through Jesus Christ. The access to to where I want to be comes through Jesus Christ. And I'm going to honor Him. I'm going to glorify Him in spite of what's going on in Philadelphia, in spite of what's going on in the community, in spite of what's going on with my own people, the Jewish people who have locked me out. They've chosen to lock me out of the synagogue because I represent Jesus Christ. And they feel like they're superior because they were the chosen ones of God. I'm going to do something fundamentally different. I'm going to keep my door open for those people, and I am not going to let that tear me down. Nor is it going to force me to do something I shouldn't do. Why? Because I understand that Jesus Christ is the answer. And so to the church in Philadelphia, the imperfect, small little church that didn't have a lot of power, there was also no criticism. Hey, there's a lot of things we can get wrong in this life. God knows that. There's a lot of things we won't do right. God knows that. But don't miss the most important thing. Don't miss, in your imperfection, what was perfect for your access to the throne room of God. See, when all the dust settles in Philadelphia, they wrapped their totality behind that one thing: Jesus Christ and Him crucified. To the church in Bayfield, we're not always going to make the right decision. We're not always going to do the best thing. But let our decisions and let our motives, let our heart and let who we are be dictated by Jesus Christ and Him crucified. It will change your life. It'll change your life. Is anybody like simplicity? I love simplicity. Russ, I saw you wave your hand over there. You with me on that one. I hate technology. I used to when I was younger like it. But now it's advanced way past my intellect. And I just like simplicity. Let me give it to you simply. Quit trying to do all the right things and do this one thing right and let it affect your existence. Let me say that again, because I think it's important for us to hear. We spend so much time in our lives trying to be good, trying to be right, trying to make good decisions, trying to make right decisions. And at the end of the day, we lose sight of this. In the attempt to be right, in the attempt to be good, we lose sight of the perfection of Jesus Christ. If we'll spend all our lives meditating on Jesus Christ and Him crucified, and allow it to influence and affect our existence on this earth, it will radically change your life. Because you know why Cooper loves his sister? It's because Jesus loves him. Do you know why I love y'all? Because Jesus loves me. Because you guys look unlovable sometimes. But that's okay. Because I want to see life like Jesus sees it. And this is how Jesus sees an imperfect church. Y'all get that? He sees it as someone that's doing it right because they haven't forgotten their first love, Jesus Christ. They haven't forgot the purpose of the blood that He shed on the cross for their redemption. And their life is going to be motivated out of that one place. So let me simplify your faith. Spend the rest of your life chasing Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And everything else will fall into place. I promise you that. Everything else. Doesn't mean there won't be hardships. Doesn't mean there won't be mistakes. But they haven't forgotten their first love. So my challenge for the church in Bayfield this morning is don't forget your first love. Don't forget the first love. Because the first love is the one that holds the keys. This morning I want to challenge y'all as a body, as individuals, that if you have forgotten even trying to be good, I love that Christmas song. Actually, I don't. But Lana loves Christmas songs. So be good for goodness sakes. I think a lot of times us Christians fall right into that place. We're trying to be good for the sake of being good. No, let our goodness flow from who Jesus is. Let who we are flow from who Jesus is. Let the decisions that I make tomorrow flow from who He is. Let the decisions I make a year from now, or how I raise my children, or how I love my grandkids, or how I deal with my employees at work, or how I perceive an election, or how, let those things come through my first love. Allow it to influence and affect my existence and my being. Do that. Spend your whole life that one thing. What's that show? City Slickers. The one thing. Hey, some of y'all know exactly. The one thing. Stay in love with Jesus. Stay in love with the perfection of who He is. And allow it to influence your existence. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, Monty, I'd ask that you come and lead us in an invitation song.